Joining us now to talk that and more on the Haney and Zeno Show with Major League Baseball from ESPN, he is Jason Stark. Jason, good afternoon.
What's happening, man?
Oh, same old, to be totally honest with you. But Manny Machado makes his debut last night. A lot of people very surprised that he skipped a complete level, AAA, to get here to Baltimore. He had been on a brilliant streak, hit for the cycle, player of the week in the Eastern League. So how surprised were you that his name was even mentioned as far as a call-up this soon?
Well, if it had been up to Buck, he would have skipped two levels because he probably would have made the team coming out of spring training, you know? So I know Buck has been pushing for him. And, you know, once the Orioles weren't able to trade for a third baseman at the deadline, I mean, what were their options? I don't know that Manny Machado was ready, just the way Bryce Harper wasn't really ready when he got called up. But there's the talent and the energy that you inject in a team by making a move like that makes it worth a try. You know, you don't have to commit to anything, but Manny Machado is so mega talented that I'm not really sure how much there is to lose, especially when you compare it to what they were getting.
He's Jason Stark of ESPN and ESPN.com. His book, The Stark Truth, one of the best baseball books, one of the best sports books I've ever read. Jason, the Orioles seem to be hanging around, and we've been saying, well, it's only the beginning of May, let's wait and see. Well, it's only the beginning of June, only the beginning of... Now we're in the beginning of August, and they're still hanging around. Are you buying them as a legitimate playoff contender?
You know, at a certain point, 112 games into the season, I guess you are what your record says you are. But with 50 games to go, I mean, I guess you're asking me, can I safely predict that this is what they're going to be and this is how they're going to play down the stretch? And it's just hard to do that, man. You know, teams with minus 53 run differentials do not make the playoffs. They never make the playoffs. And so that's a little bit scary. And run differential is, to a great degree, a predictor more than it is an indicator, if you know what I mean. If you're 8 games over .500, that's what you are. I don't want to hear what you're supposed to be. But run differential tells us what's likely to happen as a team goes along. And so that's a hard thing to rely on. 22-6 in one-run games, 12 straight wins in extra innings. It's just hard to imagine that kind of run will continue. There's just too much luck involved. There are too many variables involved. But the Orioles' resilience and their ability to keep reinventing themselves on the fly, and the fact that the manager and the coaching staff have done just such an amazing transformational job of getting them ready to play and convincing them that there's no reason they can't keep doing what they're doing, means all the stuff I said at the beginning of this answer, you probably have to throw out.
Jason Stark here on The Fan. We're talking some baseball for you, Jason, from ESPN. And we're going to get to Steven Strasburg here and the brilliance of Davey Johnson or Mike Rizzo and all of that good stuff. But real quick, as we talk about why are they doing it and how is this getting done, Oakland, of course, came out of nowhere. They were red hot, now starting to pick up the pace yet again, tied with the Orioles, or a half game ahead, I should say, in the American League wild card. What about the Oakland A's? You talk about a franchise, Jason, that reinvents itself. It seems as though they do it year after year.
They're the masters of it. They just keep looking over the horizon. And, you know, they see stuff coming a year, 2 years, 3 years before other teams do. Part of that is out of necessity. You know, they're so financially challenged until they get their stadium situation resolved, that, I mean, they know they have to start moving players before other teams would even think about it. But Billy Beane and David Forrest make such good deals over and over and over again. It's amazing anybody even trades for them. I mean, there's a team, I'll be honest about this. In spring training, we were debating whether the A's might lose more games than any team in baseball. And here you look up, they got a better record than the Angels. They got a better record than the Tigers. If the playoffs started today, they would be in them. It's shocking. But it's really a testament to how well that team is run.
Jason Stark of ESPN and ESPN.com joining Haynes and on the Fan. Jason, I don't know anybody better in the business who takes numbers and puts them in perspective. So when we talk about what Mike Trout has done so far, a 21-year-old kid with a league-leading 345 batting average, he seems like the favorite for the MVP candidate, but Jim Leland comes out and says that Miguel Cabrera, who's on his way to another 30-home run, 100-RBI season, sixth in a row, should be the MVP. And when you talk about Cabrera 6 years in a row, that's approaching like Manny Ramirez, A-Rod kind of stratosphere. Who's the MVP right now if you had to pick one?
Well, with all due respect to Jim Leland, and with all due respect to my own preseason MVP pick, which was Miguel Cabrera, it's still Mike Trout. He's just such a game-changing figure in any way that you could possibly change a game. I keep thinking about this guy who just turned 21 years old, and he's got more home runs than Prince Fielder. He's got more stolen bases than Jose Reyes or Michael Bourne. And those guys actually started the season on opening day. He didn't. He didn't get to do that. And he's doing things that have never been done, not just by 20 and 21-year-olds or by rookies, but ever. I keep saying he's some kind of incredible combination of Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, Ricky Henderson, and Kevin Durant, because there's just so much brilliance and so much energy and so many ways that he impacts that team every day. And Miguel Cabrera, as much as I love him, as much as I think he's one of the most underappreciated, underrated hitters of modern times, he doesn't catch the ball. You know, if he does catch it, they're thrilled. Mike Trout has had the reigning web jam on ESPN for like 6 weeks. I mean, it just seems to me that if the season ended now, there's not any question that Mike Trout would win. But, of course, we got 50 games to go, and anything's possible.
Yeah, Cabrera makes Wilson Bedemeat looks like Brooks Robinson over there with the glove. You wrote on ESPN.com, you need to go check this out, ladies and gentlemen. Jason, you wrote about Steven Strasburg and the innings count, which is 160-ish. I guess it depends on who you listen to. But Mark and I have discussed this many times. Talk about the article and where do you stand on shutting down a guy pretty much in the early September month where your team is very much controlling things in the NL East right now.
Right. Well, I mean, this is a big story that tries to stand back from the hysteria and really tries to examine what's the thinking, does it make sense, and, you know, kicks it around from a lot of different angles. But let me start with this, and I'll ask you guys. I don't ever remember anything like this in any sport where a team looked like it was heading for a championship and decided to stop playing one of its best players, even though he was, quote-unquote, healthy. Remember anything like that, ever?
I remember the 96 Broncos kind of mailing it in, final three games of the season. Of course, they cost him in the playoffs as they got bounced. But, not the best player, no.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite the same thing. But I'll defer to your historical perspective on it. And that's what's so amazing about it. I talked to a bunch of different sports medicine people, guys who have worked with James Andrews, who still work with James Andrews, people who have studied and analyzed injury history. And the sports medicine community thinks this is tremendous, just so you know, that we've never had a situation where a team has gone to these lengths to protect a player. And that part of it I found really interesting. But then I tried to raise two other points. One is this. Once they realized what they had a chance to do this season, didn't they have to try to figure out some different way to manage this guy, to skip him a start every 2-3 weeks, even to like invent an injury and put him on the DL for a couple of weeks? And I talked to a lot of people in baseball who think there's nothing wrong with that, and I ran it by a guy named Glenn Fleissig, who is America's foremost expert on pitcher biomechanics, and he said that's what we do all the time. If somebody comes in and they think they're heading for surgery, and we do an exam and we do an MRI and there's nothing wrong with them, what do? We shut them down for a couple weeks so they can rest and recover. That's good medicine. And the Nationals have just adamantly refused to even consider that. I find that interesting and debatable. The other part is, this is why players play, right? This is why pitchers pitch. Everybody dreams all their life of pitching and playing in October. And, you know, tried to talk to people like Chris Carpenter, Cole Hamels, Ben Sheets, Oral Hershiser, and they find it incomprehensible that a guy like Steven Strasburg wouldn't find some way to pitch in October. And that's another part of this that I think we're going to be kicking around forever, and we'll never know whether or not the Nationals did the right thing, will we?
Final thoughts for Jason Stark of ESPN. Jason, the Los Angeles Angels are 59-53, the Oakland A's 60-51. That's a game and a half difference between the two of those teams, three teams in between. Baseball has a second wild card. Are we potentially looking at a mess after 162 games with having to break 2-3 ties between multiple wild card teams?
If that happens, you have no idea what a mess it's going to be. I don't know how much attention people even paid to that postseason schedule when they finally released it yesterday. But there is zero wiggle room, zero. It's so tight that if the American League Division Series that involves the wild card and the number one seed goes the full five games, the American League Championship Series that one of those teams will participate in would start the next day. And where would it start? Nobody would know until game five of the division series was over. The site would depend on who wins that game. And so you could have a situation where not only would you have, you know, all kinds of tiebreakers and potential weather issues that would back up the schedule, but you could have a situation where, say, the Angels or, you know, win their series, and they're sitting in Anaheim not knowing whether they're going to play game one of the ALCS at home the next day, or they're going to have to watch a game and then get on a flight and take a red-eye to, like, Tampa Bay or New York or Detroit or someplace and play there the next day. I mean, I love the idea of adding the second wild card. I'm still trying to figure out why Bud Selig was so determined to do it this year, because it could be a train wreck.
Well, I'm thinking Wei Yin Chen will be ready to pitch on any day's rest there, Jason.
There you go.
Postseason. ESPN.com's the website. He's Jason Stark. Go check out the article about Steven Strasburg. Very fascinating and interesting stuff here as we're down the stretch of baseball. Jason, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
You too, guys.